Working Cows Podcast, Episode 10.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
This episode has been brought to you in part by Kamak Ranch Supply. Check out their website at KamakRanchSupply.com. This episode is also brought to you by ChrisWilliamsAudio.com. If you're a musician, podcaster, or filmmaker, don't settle for audio that's less than professional. Head on over to ChrisWilliamsAudio.com for all your podcasting, music production, and film audio needs.
Happy New Year, everybody. We are here with a bit of a special episode, a little bit of a review of where we have been thus far on this journey through the Working Cows podcast. I'm going to throw out 9 totally subjectively chosen best of moments from the Working Cows podcast journey thus far. If you think I'm wrong, feel free to share with me your favorite moments from any of the previous 9 episodes. You can hit me up on Facebook at facebook.com/workingcows. You can hit me up on Twitter at YPClayConry, twitter.com/YPClayConry. In the meantime, enjoy some of my personal favorite moments from the 2017 year that was on the Working Cows podcast.
On episode 1 of the Working Cows podcast, we sat down with Mary Jo Ehrman, who shared with us the control that is offered to people using the infinite banking concept.
Unfortunately, too often in the human condition is too often we refuse to change until the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of changing.
Yep, and that's funny that you say that, because how did the concept come to be? Nelson had a $500,000 land loan that rented 24% interest overnight on him. He had no idea how he was going to pay for it. His partner filed bankruptcy. He inherited another $300,000, so he had $800,000 at 24% interest. He says in his book, after many nights of praying, how am I going to get out of this? It came to him that he realized, I have money in life insurance, and I can use that to pay off the banks, and then I can pay myself back later. Then, how do I get more money in there as fast as I possibly can to turn around and pay off the snakes and dragons, as he calls them, and pay myself back later? Out of adversity will always come the solution. That's exactly what you said. Out of pain came the concept that I teach. Why would you need it any other way, right? So the pain is great enough in the farming industry that a lot of farmers are saying, hey, we want change. I mean, I've sold 5,000 books in 2 years or 2.5 years, not because people don't care. It's because the pain is enough that they're saying, I am done. I want control. I want to be able to say, I'm going to take a loan. This is when I'm going to pay it back. This is how fast I'm going to pay it back. I want control of my finances. I don't want that control and my livelihood in the control of the banks, because farmers put their livelihood up as collateral.
Dallas Mount joined us for episode 2 and challenged our paradigm about how we think about our family ranching operations.
Yeah, sure. So as you were talking, I was thinking about Jolene Brown, and I've heard her speak a few times. And she works with farm families in the Midwest and has a lot of good information that applies to any small business and managing these people relationships. And she talks about being a family first family or a business first family. And the idea of if we're a family and we're in business together, what comes first? Is it, are we a family first and then we also run a business, or are we in business together, and then we also are family. And when I first heard that, I thought, well, we're family first, right? Family's the most important, and we have to put family first in all the things we do. And what she says, and it kind of challenged me at first, but the more I think about it and the interactions I've had with folks, I really find it to be true, is we have to get the business relationships right so that we can be a family. And so she says, be a business first family. So we put the business and we deal with those things so that then once we have those things right and they're structured well, now we can be a family. And I really appreciate the way that she puts that and the challenges that she gives on that. And I think there's a lot to be said for making sure things are done well on the business side of things, that communication is happening, that people understand their roles, that they're being held accountable to fulfill those roles, to do the things that they say they're going to do, just like if they were an employee in any other business. And then once those things are handled well, now we can be a family. And we can enjoy those kind of relationships. Otherwise, it just really gets in the way of the family relationships, which are so important to us.
Melinda Sims joined us for episode 3, and we talked about windrow grazing.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I want to dispel one of the myths with windrow grazing, especially in windy Wyoming. Your windrows will not blow away. We have never, ever had windrows blow away. And actually, I do take that back. The University of Wyoming did have some windrows that they experimented with, and they had a huge gust come in, and it did roll up their hay and wadded up into the fence. But it was, from my understanding, right after it was hayed, they had not gotten any moisture on it yet and no regrowth to tie it down. So if you have that moisture coming down to seal the top of it, kind of put a cap on it, and the regrowth coming up from under the bottom to kind of weave its way in and hold it down, you will not have any problems with wind. We do have a lot of trees down here that kind of help break it up, but believe me, McFadden is unbelievably windy.
That's a paradigm shift there. Most people are saying, I would love to put up my hay without it ever getting rained on, and you guys are kind of, from the sounds of it, crossing your fingers a little bit to get a cap put on it with some rain to hold it together and hold it down to the ground.
Absolutely. As soon as windrowed, we want to see a little bit of moisture on it because yep. It just puts that seal on it, and it holds in all of the nutrients and holds it down.
On episode 4, we sat down with Dave Olala and talked about the winter feeding strategy that he is employing on his ranch.
The rotational cropping systems with the diversity, but the other thing I forgot, and you were out and got to see it, is integrating the cover crops into the system as well. And the point of crop is that fifth principle of keeping a living plant in the soil as long as you can throughout the year, not just during the growing season, but throughout the year. And people don't always get that. But what's so cool about this soil health initiative and how it makes sense to me is from a ranch and rangeland grass manager point of view, that's what you do with rangelands, is you manage them that way. You keep cover. You maintain diversity by rotating your grazing and by making sure you don't overgraze at the same time or overgraze any time, but you try to vary your grazing so those different plants can thrive and stay within the ecosystem in a nice, diverse plant composition. And then you think about, certainly there's no-till farming in rangeland, that you're not doing any of that. And how did the native rangelands in the northern plains develop? Through the impact of animals on there, buffalo and antelope and deer, and we've replaced them with cattle and sheep. So those that understand rangeland management can adopt and adapt those principles right into their cropland, which for me, it's quite an aha moment.
Paul Youngnich joined us for episode 5 to talk about some of the hidden benefits of bale grazing.
Check was low on nitrogen, before. I think they fertilized it the year or two before, but it was fairly low on nitrogen and didn't grow particularly much. Where we spread the raw manure and the compost, it did look somewhat better, better color, somewhat better growth. but it was quite a bit behind what the where we fed the cows in both overall yield and in protein.
Sure. Do you think that's related to the urea spread through the urine?
Yeah, for sure. There was a lot more nitrogen there. And so you had the urea that was spread, you know, when we measured it in the soil, that was measured as immediately available nitrogen, just like as if you'd fertilized. So that, you know, went directly into the plants. And then, of course, you had the, more slow-release nitrogen that would be in the dung and so that was spread. And then you had the effect, if the residue wasn't too heavy, you know, that also released nutrients as it rotted, plus it would trap moisture. So, you know, a big part of how successful the growth would be is how you manage the residue and how even you get it, and the type of grass you pick, right? We picked the bunch grass, which is not optimal, especially with if you're feeding straw.
This episode has been brought to you in part by ChrisWilliamsAudio.com. If you're a musician, podcaster, or filmmaker, making your product sound great is crucial. Don't settle for audio that's less than professional. No matter what type of audio service you need, Chris Williams and his team have got you covered. Head on over to ChrisWilliamsAudio.com for all your audio production needs. Aaron Berger pushed us outside of our box for episode 6 as we talked about cow depreciation.
So I think we have to be careful, I guess, a little bit around automatically assuming that having cows longer reduces cow depreciation. So it does in effect. I mean, obviously that's the denominator part, right? That's how many years do we get production out of a cow. But we also have to understand when a cow depreciates, we have some factors that go into that just beyond if she's how long she's there. So from Nebraska's standpoint, typically we see cows appreciate and depreciate in value. And I'm not just talking about here market fluctuation in terms of the cattle cycle or things like that, but if we were to go to a major auction barn and look at some reputation two-year-olds, they're going to bring some kind of value. I'll pick a number here, maybe that's $1,600. There was also bred females on the same sale that day calving at a similar time. If there were 3 and 4-year-olds in Nebraska anyway for similar quality, they'd actually bring more per head than those bred 2-year-olds would. And that makes sense because a 3- and 4-year-old is going to tend to be more productive and also just easier to manage than that 2-year-old. As we move to 5- to 6-year-olds, that value would tend to decrease from what it would be as a 3- and 4-year-old. And then once we move past 6 and start to get into that 7, 8, once we start to see dental deterioration in a cow, we start to see cow depreciation start to really increase. If we're getting out to that 9 or 10 and we move from a short, solid cow into what they call a broken mouth cow, then we really start to see values decrease pretty rapidly. So I think as we think about addressing cow depreciation, you want to think about what your resource base are, what you're good at. You know, if you're really good at developing replacement heifers, if your rebreed rate on those second calf heifers and those cows coming with their second calf, a 3-year-old, if you're good at getting those back in the herd and can do that pretty cost effectively, maybe an opportunity to reduce cow depreciation is to turn your cow numbers faster. So once a cow gets to be age 5 or 6, maybe we think about selling her at her prime of life when she has the greatest value, really, and before we start to really start to see much cow depreciation.
Josh Siebesma and I sat down together and talked about the Hoop beef system. As part of our discussion, we talked about the benefits of returning the nutrients to the soil.
Where's that going?
Manure?
Yep.
Well, on the fields.
Yeah. Does it end up back on some of the same fields that the crops that they were eating came off of?
Yep.
That's a good thing, right?
It's kind of amazing to how much. We actually had the NRCS come out and took samples of the manure and weighed our manure spreader and figured out how many tons we were putting down on a pass when we go out and spread it, and then figured out all our the nutrients we were putting down through the test, and figured we were putting probably more than we should have been down on the ground, but at that point we were putting on grass, so it needs it, so we were pushing it a little harder. It's very interesting. I didn't realize we could do that until, you know, these guys came out and we were talking, oh yeah, that's a free, they didn't charge us anything to come do it.
Sure.
But you know, we scaled the scaled the manure spreader with a load on, and then we went out and spread it, measured everything up. They had their formulas. It took a couple of days, but they got it. Sent me all the paperwork back. So,
nice.
And that right there is a huge, huge cost saver for, you know, going out and buying fertilizer from town and putting it down on, you know, the ground.
Yeah.
So, and we're not going to be able to cover all our ground with it, but, you know, you keep moving. You can't just keep spreading it on the same place. You got to go, you know, move it all over the, you know, we've got a section there to work with. You know, we're getting to those places that hasn't had manure spread on it probably ever from, you know, when my grandpa owned the place.
On episode 8, Fernando Falamir joined me, and we talked about how they are reversing desertification with their regenerative ranching practices.
Do you think that in time some of that other unproductive third of the ranch will come back?
Yes, eventually it will. But once you lost the fertile topsoil, I mean, it's you starting from negative numbers. There's no seed bank. Anything that lands on the soil just gets washed away. Even though you push your cattle with a high density and break up the soil crust, the erosion is so high that everything gets washed away. And we do see a lot of progress. In a couple of my fences in those pastures, they've been silting up almost the entire height of the electric fence up to my knee each year. So we have to go back and raise the fences so that they're still useful.
Is that like a dust is blowing across, or?
No, it's from water erosion.
Okay.
So that's part of our management to avoid that is we always try to keep enough ground cover to retain water and then to stop soil erosion any further.
Sure.
So our rule of thumb is it's high animal density as our tool. Cattle are our primary tool to restoring the land. And, well, as any tool, it can also be mismanaged. It's a sort of two edges. This is what people have a lot of struggle understanding is that cattle aren't bad. We are. We mismanage, and our tool gets blamed.
Finally, on episode 9, Derek Swanebeck and I sat down and talked about deferred grazing and the benefits that they are experiencing in the sand hills of Nebraska.
What are some of the benefits that you guys are noticing? You mentioned root mass. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. It's Nicole Masters was in America, and we got to listen to her talk. And she just loves the soil and all the microorganisms and things that are growing underneath. And so, like I mess with cow manure, I love to crack open the soil and smell what's down there, and the roots and the things that are growing right around the roots. If it smells good, if it smells like, you know, after you mowed the lawn or when it's raining, things are going good there. And if it doesn't smell, it's kind of just dry. There's nothing growing. And when we use the animals to impact correctly, they will kickstart that system. And like a great indication, we go across a meadow and they will stomp down half of what they're eating. And where most people would put that into a hay bale, we're putting it right back into the soil, but it covered it up. It's just like somebody mows their lawn and there's a clump of, you know, grass that didn't get put into the lawn bag. Middle of the afternoon, you kick that over, it's wet under there, and it smells good. And the more organic matter we get back into the ground or on top of the ground, just like that, the more bugs, you know, we're talking warm and wet, that's where the bugs flourish. And the right bugs, and that helps the root mass. We either graze or we impact that plant life, which kills off roots below the surface, but they don't just disappear. They'll rot and they'll feed microorganisms. The microorganisms, in turn, feed the new roots that are growing, and it really turns into a system. It's like a bank account that you keep investing in, and you can live off a lot more interest when you don't take as much out of that account very often. And there's probably a level of production where you have to plateau somewhere, but we're in a lot of places. I haven't seen that yet. We haven't even got there. It's just the more you put back into it, the more it keeps going.
This episode has been brought to you in part by Kamak Ranch Supply. Check out their website at kamakranchsupply.com. They understand the needs of ranchers and farmers, whether you need to take care of your livestock, horses, or even building supplies. They have everything you need to work your cows, whether that be the chute you work them through, the water you bring them to, or the tools you use to make them go up that chute a little bit faster. So check out their website at kamakranchsupply.com. Well, I hope you enjoyed that best of episode. We are going to continue to kick off 2018 with a bang. January 8th, we have Trey Patterson of the Padlock Ranch joining us. January 15th, we've got Kurt Pate joining us to talk about stockmanship. January 22nd, we're talking with Dave Pratt from Ranching for Profit. On January 29th, we are talking with Roland Cruz from Holistic Management International and Crossroads Ranch Consulting. We might have a few more coming in February, just waiting to confirm those. So please be sure to like the Working Cows Facebook page, to engage there in the discussions, to share the posts that are made on Facebook. We've had some really great results when those posts get shared into the stockmanship and ranch roping discussion group, the regenerative ranching group, the defending beef group, other groups out there. If you're a member of other groups, feel free to share there in those groups and let me know about it. Also, it's very helpful if you can subscribe, rate, and review through whatever podcast store you use, whether that's the Google Play Store or the iTunes Store or Stitcher or any of those. If you can like or if you can subscribe, rate, and review there, that's also very helpful. I hope you enjoy our start to 2018 here at the Working Cows Podcast, and I can't wait to see the opportunities that continue to arise as a result of this platform.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.